Welcome to missionalmoney.com, where you create a compelling financial plan to visualize, track, and achieve your goals. Now, here's certified financial planner and coach, Jim Munchback, to help you gain more clarity, confidence, and contentment in your financial life.
Hey there, hope you're having a great day. It's another beautiful day at Stephen F. Austin State Park. We're here kind of checking out the park after most folks have left after a very busy weekend. And you might notice, if you've been joining us, following along, you might notice that the trees are pretty much fully winterized. So, I've been talking about the changing of the seasons here at the Stephen F. Austin State Park, and you can see they're changing. If you missed me last week, if you missed the show last week, well, I apologize. We took a quick trip to Michigan, and we had a great time. Took Caleb and Maddie and Carissa and the two dogs, Velcro and Lucy, and threw them into a rental van and drove to Lansing, Michigan. And so that's where we were, but I promise we will make it up to you somehow. We'll do an extra episode soon. So today, oh, by the way, I'm Jim Munchback, and this is the Missional Money Podcast, another episode of the Missional Money Podcast, and we'll talk about money and faith and financial planning, and I'll share a couple tips and tools with you in this episode, as well as a clip from my book, Make Your Money Count. Today, the question is, what is your first memory of money? Your first memories of money. That's what we're going to talk about. We'll end the show with a nice spiritual segment from the Blue Book Study, an old podcast that has a lot of really, I think, fantastic words of wisdom. I like to listen to it every once in a while, and I hope you will enjoy it. So that's what we're going to cover. Oh, and then also we're going to cover a quick little adventure from Apple Homeschool. If you're following along, you know that Caleb and Maddie have begun homeschooling this year, and my job as pops is to teach them technology. So I'm teaching them how to use their Apple devices to be more productive. They have access to their mom's iPhone. They have an iPad, which was provided by yours truly. And I also got them set up with a really powerful Mac Mini, one of the most advanced computers ever built for a very reasonable price. They even have two monitors. So today, let's just do that right now. I want to share one of my favorite tips. If you're an Apple user, this is one of the things that I think will help you. It's free. It's one of the hidden gems in the Apple ecosystem. It's called Text Replacement. Have you heard of it? Do you use it? If you have, leave a comment. If you're watching on YouTube, at Jim Munchback, I hope you'll leave a comment and tell me if you use Text Replacement on your Apple devices. It's so cool. I'm going to show you right now. I'm just going to record it on my phone and then drop it in here. I'll show you how to use Text Replacement. And the cool thing about it is, when you use Text Replacement, when you add what I call a snippet, a little piece of letter, like you'll see on the screen here in a minute, when you add that, it will give you, when you put that, use that in your keyboard, it will totally magically create whatever it is that you've made with that snippet. So, if, for example, email, I have several email addresses, and one of the things I'll do is use the text replacement so that I put in my initial. You can put in anything you want. You want to make it a little piece of code, not a word that you normally would type. But I like to start with my initials so that all of them are together. So J, and then E would be email, and my iCloud email would be I. So J-E-I would be my iCloud email address. And then I do J-E-G, which would be my Gmail address. And then for my business mail, I just do B-mail. So that's what I do. Text replacement, the most, I mean, it's probably the most useful, productive piece of snippet in the entire Apple ecosystem. I mean, if you're not using it, you'll want to check it out. So that's that. Check that off the list. Next, I want to jump in and do a little bit of conversation here. So we were in Michigan. Like I said, we took a great trip to Michigan. And one of my favorite things while we were in Michigan is we got to go down this, we went to a place called Hawk Island in Lansing, Michigan. And we got to, Maddie and Caleb had not seen snow. So what I'm going to do now is I'm just going to drop in some of the clips that I took while we were on this hill at Hawk Island. If you've ever been there, please leave a comment. I'd never been to Hawk Island. I grew up in Lansing, Michigan, and one of my favorite things to do in Lansing when I'm there is to walk this trail that is relatively new in Lansing. And my nephew Paul, hi Paul, he was telling me that this trail, it goes all the way around the city of Lansing. In fact, it actually goes through my mother's yard. It goes all the way around the city, including, it goes through Hawk Island, which I did not know. But while we were there, we visited Hawk Island. Hawk Island has this really cool thing that is managed by the city of Lansing, which is a snow hill. They make snow. So we weren't positive we were going to have snow when we went to Lansing. And Caleb and Maddie were both very excited about seeing snow. So we had our fingers crossed that we would actually see snow. And we were there in the perfect time. We got a clean dusting of snow. It was fantastic. And I'm going to show you some clips of we making a snowman, even Caleb's first snowball. Now, if you're watching on YouTube, you gotta like this video just for the snowball. This is Caleb's first snowball. We stopped at Dollar General, and he had some of his own money, and he wanted to buy this snowball maker. And so we had snowball fights. You're going to get to see a clip. You're probably watching it now if I did my job editing this video before I went live. So that's part of this episode. I just want to share a little bit about our trip to Michigan, and my apologies for missing the weekly episode of Missional Money. One of the other things we did while we were in Lansing is we got together as a family and decided that this summer we're going to try to make another trip to the Kentucky Lake House. And that's a very special place, and I'm going to tell you why it's a very special place here in just a minute. But we made that decision together. This, you know, it's the beginning of the year, so we always talk about where are we going to try to go as a family to spend a week together, kind of like a family reunion. And so we're going to the lake house. So buckle in for this episode of the Missional Money Podcast. It's called Your First Memories of Money, and you're going to find out why here in just a minute. So you're going to also get to hear an excerpt from my book, Make Your Money Count, which has a very special chapter called First Memories of Money. You're going to hear that in just a few minutes. Before we do that, though, let me just talk a little bit about this week's financial planning resources. So it is kind of the beginning of the year, and so one of the things that I shared with you last week was start of the year financial planning, and I also shared important numbers and important dates, and those are very helpful resources. You can go find those in the show notes from last week's show. But this week I'm going to share it's a checklist for just having an annual review. It's a very helpful checklist if you don't currently review your financial life with your financial advisor. This is a great tool to help you get started. So it's called the annual planning checklist. Another one is similar but different. This checklist is new client checklist. So if you've ever moved from one financial advisor to another, there are a lot of very important key things you want to discuss with your new financial advisor. And so we provided that checklist, the new client checklist. If you're a financial advisor, I would highly recommend that you subscribe to the show, like the show. It's in iTunes, so it's a podcast. We make the show, we structure the show to utilize the tools in Apple Podcasts. So I would encourage you to check out the show, Missional Money Podcast, and you'll find links in the show notes to these resources. But if you're a financial advisor, you're going to want to check out the new client checklist. If you're not an advisor, you want to check it out in the event that you ever consider using or changing financial advisors. And finally, the third resource I'm going to share, and you should be seeing these on the screen now, again, if I did my job editing this video before we went live. So what you should be seeing is the, it's called the Important Milestones, or maybe it's just Milestones, but it is a checklist of kind of things that happen throughout your lifetime that are important financial planning events, milestones, we call them. So that is that. So we covered two of the regular components in this episode. Again, there are four. We do the financial planning resource. We just did that. We also do the Apple Homeschool Adventure. That's usually one of my favorite tips. One of the things I'm teaching Maddie and Caleb, I haven't actually taught them this week's Apple Homeschool lesson, which is text replacement. It's more for adults. I'll teach it to Maddie and Caleb pretty soon. If you haven't noticed, I have exited the park. I want to show you one of my favorite roads to travel on here as we go through this episode. So I'm just outside the Stephen F. Austin State Park. It is a fantastically beautiful day. Yeah, this week though, so we're going to do, again, the four elements. Let me just highlight those real quick. Each week we'll do financial planning, investment management tools and tips. Usually it's a resource. This is tough, doing a podcast on a motorcycle or video. But if you look over there, you'll see the work they've been doing in this little section. When it floods, when it rains hard, it floods. And so it doesn't drain well. So what you're seeing, I'm checking on the progress. These guys have been working on this for a while. So back to the list, the four things we cover in each podcast is the financial planning and investment management resource. We'll usually do two or three. This week we did three. And that's one segment of the show. And then we do an excerpt. I'm going to do an excerpt this week from my book, Make Your Money Count. It's a book that is really part of this podcast because a few years ago, I wrote this book, Make Your Money Count, as a tool for folks who are trying to learn how to engage in financial planning. Make Your Money Count uses a metaphor called the blueprint for financial success. But the book is filled with stories, and the overall book outlines a really practical and helpful process for financial planning, the way that I do financial planning. So I hope you will consider following along. And when you get to the point where you say, hey, I want to read the whole book, we'll make that available to you. And I'm even going to tell you at the very end of these episodes, I'm going to share with you a way that you can enroll in our online course called Missional Money, by the way. And in that course, you will receive a copy of Make Your Money Count, a special limited hard copy edition of Make Your Money Count. If you're a financial advisor, you might want to consider one of my other books. Make Your Money Count was for regular folks who are engaging or thinking about engaging in financial planning. What Matters Most is a book that I wrote for the purpose of training financial advisors in the financial planning process that I use. I've been teaching financial advisors for many years, and that was the first book I wrote, What Matters Most. I was a State Farm agent, actually, when I wrote that book. And if you didn't know, I was the first and only State Farm agent to become a certified financial planner in the Houston area. And that was quite an adventure, I must say. So those were three, and then three of the segments in the show. And then the final fourth segment, we're going to end each episode with kind of a repurposed podcast. I shared with you last week, I used to be part of a really awesome small group. And for a season, we studied this book. It was called The Blue Book. The book didn't really even have a title. It was just blue. So it was a blue book. And we loved that book. We still, my wife and I bought cases of it and gave it away as gifts. And I made a podcast out of The Blue Book. So every episode will end with that. So back to this week's topic, which is your first memories of money. So I want you to think about your first memory of money. I want you to think about it not just now. I want you to think about it, reflect on your first memories of money. Maybe it was when you first held quarters in your hand. Maybe it was when you got your first allowance, or back when you were a kid and you did work and you got an allowance. Or maybe it was when you took the, you know, all those soft drink bottles to the store and got the deposit back. Or maybe it was a tooth fairy. Maybe it was your first job, your first paycheck, and you remember what you did to earn that first paycheck. Whatever it was, I want you to think about your first memories of money. So I'm going to play a segment from my book again. It's from the chapter, First Memories of Money. And the very first story that I'm going to share is my Uncle Hank. I told you we're going to the lake house, the Kentucky Lake House. Well, that's a very special place, and I'm going to tell you why. My Uncle Hank, who has since passed, he passed away a few years ago, the same year that my dad passed away, the same year that my Aunt Doris passed away. We had several funerals within just a few months, and Hank passed that year. But Hank's the guy in our family. He was the guy in our family. Like, when my wife Connie met Uncle Hank, as soon as she met him, she knew that he was the guy. He was the go-to guy. If you needed any advice, it was Uncle Hank. And I've been married a long time. We just celebrated our, I want to say, 43rd wedding anniversary? I should know. We got married in 82. So, yeah, 43 years. And all through those years, from the very time my wife met Uncle Hank, if we ever had a big decision to make, my wife would say, what would Hank do? You should talk to your Uncle Hank. You know, tough things we had to figure out throughout our marriage. A lot of times they were financial things, and Uncle Hank was the guy we would go to. Well, I remember the day that I asked Uncle Hank, what's your first memories of money? I'll never forget that day. It was a day much like this. In fact, it was a road a little bit like this. We were out in the country outside of Bowling Green, Kentucky. And it was a gorgeous blue sky day just like this. And we were walking and talking. And I had looked forward to my time. I always looked forward to my time with Hank. But that day, I knew that we were going to, you know, get to spend some time together. I asked him if we could go for a walk. I wanted to talk to him about his financial life. I had recently become a certified financial planner, and I was planning on asking Hank to become my first client, which I eventually did. But before that, I wanted to get to know Hank. I wanted to get to know really what made him tick. What, you know, I wanted to understand how he thought about money and just really understand Hank. So I asked him the question, what's your first memory of money? And I'll never forget the answer. I'll tell you, the Kentucky Lake House is a big part of this story, but it's not in the book. So in fact, when you hear the excerpt you're going to hear from Make Your Money Count, the first story, like I said, is Hank. But in that story, I tell you that Hank shares his first memory of money, and his family raised pigs. But in the book, for some reason, one of the things I really regret, very few things I regret about Make Your Money Count, the book came out great, but I let my editor convince me that we should use cows instead of pigs. And there was a couple reasons for that, but the truth is, Hank's family raised pigs. and his dad was a pig farmer. And when I asked my Uncle Hank about his first memories of money, he told me about a time in his young life when he saw his father cry for the very first and only time of his life. And it was because they were, like I said, they were, his family raised pigs. Hank's dad raised pigs. And it was a tough year, this particular year. Hank came home from school and his father was sitting at the kitchen table crying. And the reason he was crying is because that day he found out that he had all of his pigs that he'd raised and he sold them. Typically what would happen is they would sell them to a broker. A broker would come by, check out the herd or the stock, whatever you call it if you're a farmer. I'm not a farmer. But they would then make you an offer and they would agree on a price per head and then they would contract with you to pay you. They'd pick up the stock and you'd receive a check. I guess that's how it worked. That's how it worked that time for my Uncle Hank, for his dad. The problem was this broker was a fraud. He must have been from Minnesota, maybe. A Somali from Minnesota. I don't know. Sorry about that. But he was a fraudster. He never paid my Uncle Hank's dad for the pigs. And imagine that. Like, I don't know how many litters of pigs you have in a year. I should know that, but that entire batch of pigs turned out to be a non-payment. He got paid nothing for that. And that was a financial catastrophe. And so my Uncle Hank shared that story about watching his dad cry. And as I listened to him share that story, I knew my Uncle Hank pretty well. I knew he was very successful. And I was curious what he thought, like how he felt when I asked that question. He experienced that whole thing again, which is ironically what happens on a regular basis when I ask this question. I've been asking this question to clients for 20 years, ever since I became certified financial planner. We call this, by the way, in the business, we call this discovery. There's lots of ways to get the information you need to have a productive and efficient relationship with a client. There's tons of information you need to gather. Most of it's technical and boring and it's financial stuff, but I always focused on the heart stuff. And this question to me has been one of the most powerful, helpful, revealing questions ever, especially with a couple. If you ask this, if I visited with you and your spouse and we were going to consider working together and I was going to help you create a financial plan, then, you know, I would ask you this question, but I would ask you guys together. And what I found, what I experienced over and over and over, is that spouses never talk about their first memories of money. So many times, what would happen in these meetings is one spouse would discover what their other spouse's first memories of money was, and vice versa. And then we would have a conversation about, what does that really mean? We would kind of sort of connect the dots. And that's what I did with my Uncle Hank. I tried to have a conversation, kind of like my friends at Morgan Stanley used to call me the Dr. Phil of financial planning, because I would ask all these questions they'd never imagined or heard. And this is one of those questions. And it's not really about the question, what's your first memory of money? That's part of it. That creates, it kind of opens the door for an emotional experience. But what happens is after that question, you start to unpack, what does it mean? And that's what I did with my Uncle Hank. And he got it very quickly. He understood that when he experienced what he experienced with his dad, and his dad cried, and he saw his dad cry, and he experienced the pain, the loss of that financial catastrophe with his dad, that shaped him financially. It imprinted in him a certain financial DNA, a behavior that stuck with him to the last day of his life. And he knew it, and he shared it with me. And it was basically this. because Hank was, he experienced that with his dad. He became very, very frugal. Like, the dude had the first dollar he ever earned, and he was very successful. He was an investor. He was not afraid to take some risk, but he was a saver, and he was a planner, and he was very careful with his money, and he had really done well. And anyone who knew him knew that he had his stuff together. Like I said, he was the go-to guy in the family. But anyway, he knew that that story, that experience shaped him and made him the frugal dude that he was, a very, very frugal man. And he wouldn't spend money. And so we talked a little bit. I asked him questions to understand, so what is that, like, I see what the benefits are. Clearly there were benefits. But what were some of the drawbacks for you, Hank, in your life? And he knew very quickly. He said, you know, because I'm so frugal, I don't spend money making the kind of memories that we should do for our family. I'd like to invest more in my family and have better, you know, make some better memories together and be more lavish in spending in that department. And he said, because of my frugality, I'm frugal in all areas of my life, and I wish I wasn't so frugal there, because he knew he could afford to be more lavish in his time and experiences and memories that he made with his family. And he said, by the way, Jim, I want to tell you something. And this is, now I want to talk about the Kentucky Lake House. Because it was in that conversation on a date, much like today. The temperature was like this. The sky was like this. The road was like this. And Hank told me, he said, I bought a lot. It was, at the time, about $100,000 he put down on a lot on the Barren River Reservoir. He said, I'm going to build a lake house. Lorraine and I, my Aunt Lorraine, we're going to build a lake house. And he said, he shared his vision for that lake house with me. He said, me and Lorraine, my aunt, he said, we want this house, this lake house, to be a place where memories get made, where the family comes together and we have lots of time together enjoying. Barren River Reservoir is an amazing place. It's an awesome lake. And their lake house on that lot that Hank bought, it's a beautiful place. And I'm going to make a commitment. I hope we get to go there this summer. I think we will. We've gone there several years. It's been a couple years since we've gone. Caleb and Maddie love it. We'll be in the boat, a pontoon boat. The whole family will come together. And I'm going to commit to try to do that week's episode from the lake house somewhere. Maybe out on a boat or a pontoon boat or who knows, a paddle boat, whatever. But you're not going to want to miss that. It's a beautiful place. And I'd love to share it with you. Because it was one of... The lake house is a very special place because of Uncle Hank, because of that story. And so I want you to listen now. I'm going to just play a clip from Make Your Money Counts.
First memories about money. Quote, happiness is nothing more than good health and a bad memory. Albert Schweitzer. My Uncle Hank is a wonderful but complicated man. He is one of the most generous, gracious people I've ever known, but when it comes to spending money on himself, he can be incredibly tight. A couple of years ago, he told me perhaps his most powerful childhood memory. He grew up on a small farm, and his dad raised cattle. The only cash Hank's dad earned was from the sale of calves each year. Uncle Hank told me that in one of those bleak years, his father handed all of his calves to a broker, who was to sell them and bring him the profits. The broker, though, was a crook who ran off with the money. Hank told me, I came in the house that day, and my father was sitting at the table crying. I'd never seen my dad cry before. Those calves represented our family's income for the whole year. As we continued to talk about the traumatic moment, Uncle Hank explained that seeing his dad cry filled him with fear that someday, somehow, he too wouldn't have enough money for his family. That fear drove him to be shrewd in handling money. He became a very successful businessman, and investor, but his fear also made him extremely reluctant to spend money. He has always been very generous with his family, but extremely frugal about spending money on himself. Those traits sound like great strengths, and they are in most cases, but Uncle Hank's fear produced tension that could keep him from celebrating his wealth and his life. In moderation, being frugal is a wonderful strength, but some people cling to their money because they are motivated by fear or pride. Money is meant to accomplish good and noble purposes, so frugality only has meaning if it channels our money to efficiently use our resources to fulfill our life's purposes.
Faith, Day 2.
Oh Lord, help me to really believe. Help me to really believe that your heart for me is good. Help me to really believe that nothing can separate me from your love. Help me to really believe that you will do what you say you'll do. Help me to take you at your word. In the name of Jesus, Amen.
Your faith has saved you, Jesus said. See Luke 7:50. Faith in what? Faith in the divine goodness that is ready to forgive everything and everyone who comes. Faith in the infinite mercy of God, which is not concerned with numbers, since it is infinite, but with gratitude and self-surrender. By entrusting herself to divine love, she received complete forgiveness and was empowered to prove her gratitude by the extent of her courtesy. From Awakenings by Thomas Keating.
For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you a hope and a future. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. I'll be found by you, declares the Lord.
By faith Noah, being warned by God concerning events as yet unseen, in reverent fear constructed an ark for the saving of his household. By this he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. By faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. By faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born descendants as many as the stars of heaven, and as many as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. By faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, "Through Isaac shall your offspring be named." He considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. By faith, Isaac invoked future blessings on Jacob and Esau. By faith, Jacob, when dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph, bowing in worship over the head of his staff. By faith, Joseph, at the end of his life, made mention of the exodus of the Israelites and gave directions concerning his bones. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents, because they saw that the child was beautiful, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. he considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. By faith he left Egypt, not being afraid of the anger of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover and sprinkled the blood, so that the destroyer of the firstborn might not touch them. Psalm 89, a maskil of Ethan the Ezrahite. I will sing of the steadfast love of the Lord forever. With my mouth I will make known your faithfulness to all generations. For I said, steadfast love will be built up forever. In the heavens you will establish your faithfulness. You have said, I have made a covenant with my chosen one. I have sworn to David my servant, I will establish your offspring forever and build your throne for all generations. Selah. Let the heavens praise your wonders, O Lord, your faithfulness in the assembly of the holy ones. For who in the skies can be compared to the Lord? Who among the heavenly beings is like the Lord? A God greatly to be feared in the council of the holy ones, and awesome above all who are around him. O Lord God of hosts, who is mighty as you are, O Lord, with your faithfulness all around you? You rule the raging of the sea. When its waves rise, you still them. You crushed Rahab like a carcass. You scattered your enemies with your mighty arm. The heavens are yours. The earth also is yours. The world and all that is in it, you have founded them. The north and the south, you have created them. Tabor and Hermon joyously praise your name. You have a mighty arm, strong is your hand, high your right hand. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of your throne. Steadfast love and faithfulness go before you. Blessed are the people who know the festal shout, who walk, O Lord, in the light of your face, who exult in your name all the day, and in your righteousness are exalted. For you are the glory of their strength. By your favor our horn is exalted. For our shield belongs to the Lord, our King to the Holy One of Israel. Of old you spoke in a vision to your godly one and said, I have granted help to one who is mighty. I have exalted one chosen from the people. I have found David my servant. With my holy oil I have anointed him, so that my hand shall be established with him. My arm also shall strengthen him. The enemy shall not outwit him. The wicked shall not humble him. I will crush his foes before him and strike down those who hate him. My faithfulness and my steadfast love shall be with him, and in my name shall his horn be exalted. I will set his hand on the sea and his right hand on the rivers. He shall cry to me, "You are my Father, my God, and the rock of my salvation." And I will make him the firstborn, the highest of the kings of the earth. My steadfast love I will keep for him forever, and my covenant will stand firm for him. I will establish his offspring forever and his throne as the days of the heavens. If his children forsake my law and do not walk according to my rules, if they violate my statutes and do not keep my commandments, then I will punish their transgression with the rod and their iniquity with stripes. But I will not remove from him my steadfast love or be false to my faithfulness. I will not violate my covenant or alter the word that went forth from my lips. Once for all I have sworn by my holiness, I will not lie to David. His offspring shall endure forever, his throne as long as the sun before me. Like the moon it shall be established forever, a faithful witness in the skies. Selah. But now you have cast off and rejected. You are full of wrath against your anointed. You have renounced the covenant with your servant. You have defiled his crown in the dust. You have breached all his walls. You have laid his strongholds in ruins. All who pass by plunder him. He has become the scorn of his neighbors. You have exalted the right hand of his foes. You have made all his enemies rejoice. You have also turned back the edge of his sword, and you have not made him stand in battle. You have made his splendor to cease and cast his throne to the ground. You have cut short the days of his youth. You have covered him with shame. Selah. How long, O Lord? Will you hide yourself forever? How long will your wrath burn like fire? Remember how short my time is. For what vanity you have created all the children of man. What man can live and never see death? Who can deliver his soul from the power of Sheol? Selah. Lord, where is your steadfast love of old, which by your faithfulness you swore to David? Remember, O Lord, how your servants are mocked, and how I bear in my heart the insults of all the many nations with which your enemies mock, O Lord, with which they mock the footsteps of your anointed. Blessed be the Lord forever. Amen and amen.
Keep me safe, O God, for in you I take refuge. I've said to the Lord, you are my Lord. Apart from you, I have no good thing. Apart from you, I have no good thing. Keep me safe, O God, for in you I take refuge. I have said to the Lord,